Good afternoon. I'm going to call the Senate Committee on General Government Accountability for Wednesday, May 24, 2017, to order. And we're going to go in order. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2332A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2332A requires state agencies with more than 100 employees to develop a report on each agency's proposed maximum supervisory ratio for the Joint Committee on Ways and Means as part of the agency's legislatively adopted budget. It establishes a baseline ratio of 11 to 1 and specifies factors for each agency to make adjustments away from that ratio. It requires Joint Ways and Means to review ratios reported by agencies and include ratio information in budget report or note. Prohibits agency whose actual supervisory ratio is greater than its maximum supervisory ratio from filling vacant supervisory positions unless the Department of Administrative Services determines that additional supervisory position is reasonably necessary. It also directs DAS to report quarterly on the actual supervisory ratio of each agency, authorizes rulemaking, defines terms, and it applies to budgets for the biennial beginning on or after July 1st, 2019. It came unanimously out of the House Rules Committee and unanimously off the House floor. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal.
Thank you. Daz is here. Lindsay?
Here. Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, Lindsay Baker with the Department of Administrative Services. Cheyenne gave a pretty thorough summary of what the measure does, but just by way of a little bit of background, because I know that this concept has been sort of kicking around, I think, five or six sessions prior to now. So in the 2011 session, this body passed House Bill 2020, which really was the first time that you all had contemplated a best practice when it comes to supervisory and the ratio of supervisory to non-supervisory employees. At that time, that measure directed DAS as an agency to essentially look at what a best ratio might look like and develop a plan for helping agencies get to that point. During the 2012 session, this body also passed a measure that replaced that earlier one and directed agencies to, in fact, work toward that 11 to 1 ratio. During the 2013 session, another measure was passed that continued that progress, but gave a little bit more, put a little bit of a finer point on the exemption criteria and what DAS would look at when we're determining whether or not an agency that would be exempt from having to get to this 11 to 1. During the 2015 session, this body passed House Bill 4131, which essentially placed a pause on progress toward the 11 to 1. It directed agencies to essentially hold where they are now and pause getting toward that strict 11 to 1. It also, during that measure, directed DAS to develop or to start a work group and develop recommendations to come back to 2017 legislature on what an ultimate best practice might look like. So we did a work group process during the interim and are here before you today with House Bill 2332. So like staff indicated, what this does is a few things. The first one is it really eliminates that strict adherence to the 11 to 1, recognizing that that sort of one-size-fits-all approach maybe is not best for every agency, for different business practices, different geographic disbursement, et cetera. However, it does retain that 11 to 1 is that baseline ratio. So we will assume, for purposes of agency management ratios, that 11 to 1 makes most sense. And then we will direct agencies to essentially look at 11 to 1 and then, based on a bunch of different factors, adjust that a ratio up or down based on those factors. Agencies will develop this maximum proposed ratio as part of their budget development process and will present that ratio to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means during their budget hearings every biennium. That's pretty much all the measure does. I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have never heard of forcing direct or management from 11 to 1 or any amount. The most complaint I ever get is we have too many managers and not enough workers. And so originally I was looking at this. I understand it's a current rule, and this gives it a little bit more flexibility. Mm-hmm. If it was up to me, I'd just eliminate the whole thing completely. It makes no sense to me. I think directors should be able to, establish what ratios they need to get the job done and hire accordingly. So, and this does give flexibility, but it's a whole bunch of reporting, a whole bunch of stuff that does nothing to finish the job and do your job well. So originally I was opposed to it, but if it flexes it a little bit, I'm okay with it. Thank you.
Yeah, Senator Hess.
Thank you. I think to Senator DeBoer's point, the impetus behind this sort of movement several years ago was to reduce the number of supervisors. There were too many cooks in the kitchen. And anyway, my question is this phrase maximum supervisory ratio. I can't compute what that is. What does that mean?
Chair Riley, Senator Haas, it is the 11-1. So agencies will present whether their best practice maximum proposed ratio is 11-1 or 8-1 or 15-1.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you very much. So I'm going to close this public hearing, and I'm going to open a work session on 2332A. Senator DeBoer.
Chair Riley, I move 2332A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator DeBoer moves House Bill 2332A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? It is moved, and with Senator Thatcher excused. Would you like to share this, Senator Haas? Thank you. All right, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2874A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2874 exempts email addresses in the possession of offices of the legislative department from mandatory disclosure under public records laws. It permits, upon request, disclosure of email addresses used to distribute elective officeholder newsletters to campaign office of current officeholder and current candidates who have filed to run for elective office. It takes effect the 91st day after sine die. It came out of the Rules Committee with one no vote and off the House floor with 21 no votes. It has a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact.
Thank you. Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Phil Barnhart, State Representative from House District 11. This bill is a finishing up of an exemption that concerning privacy of email addresses that we started a couple of sessions ago with the adoption of what became subsection 40 of ORS 192.502, it adds the legislative department to the language that's already there. Agency or subdivision of the executive department, a local government, a local service district. The reason that I brought this bill initially was to deal with the fact that we have entrusted us email addresses by a number of people whose only interest is either to comment on legislation or to get access to our newsletters as they come out. I hold town hall meetings, and when I do, I pass around a sign-up sheet, ask people to write their email addresses legibly if they would like to get my newsletter. If they don't want the newsletter, they can write them illegibly. That usually gets a laugh, and they then try to write them legibly. But they don't expect that I'm going to release their email address to third parties who will use it for purposes other than receiving my e-newsletter. I have not had expressed to me any argument why an individual's email address should be released to the public under these circumstances. If their name is somehow relevant to an issue that's before the legislature, that of course is not exempted by this measure, only the email address. In 2015, a spammer used the public records law to request email addresses of people on my e-newsletter list, and I think also on the lists of most or all of the House and Senate members. It was done during session, and we were advised by Ledge Council that we didn't have to respond to that request except to say that it was exempt because we were in session. But of course, that request could come in at any time, and we might be required to comply with it. There really is no public purpose served by revealing email addresses, and I think I've already mentioned that. I'm going to skip the rest of those remarks. I also received an email from Justin Brecht, who is a policy and media advisor to Senator Thatcher, and it's ironic in a way that, as you probably know, Senator Thatcher and I, when she was in the House, were often referred to as the odd couple because we brought the transparency bills in the House that were passed to set up the transparency website and do a variety of other things that led to greatly increased transparency for state government. And here we are asking that something which is currently public information not be. What Justin points out in his newsletter to me is something that's essentially what I just described. Also, he points out that that other agencies of the government are already exempt from releasing email addresses under these accounts, and I read that section to you from the bill. It's on page 7 and 8. He also notes, with something I didn't actually explore, many other states have similar exemptions to protect constituents from phishing expeditions by spammers. He goes on to point out that while it was said on the House floor that this is a special exemption only meant for legislators and it's self-serving, the reality is that the current law already allows legislators to share email addresses with their campaign committees. This would make it clear that it could also be shared with candidates for current candidates for the elective office for the same elective office as noted in the bill. Legislators can already use email addresses, their email addresses that we gather for our newsletters in the same manner that the bill allows as an exception. The bill doesn't change that fact at all. So I commend the bill to your attention, hopefully favorably. It is not designed to hide public information. It is designed to protect the email addresses of those who want to get information from us from spammers. That's all it's about. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Hass.
Thank you. I'm going to support this because Representative Barnhart's my brother-in-arms in our other crusade here. But I just do want to point out that last week I voted against another public records exemption, although very well intended, for the small business office, and that all of that is what happened to our public records laws from the 1970s that were so highly acclaimed that over 40 or 50 years they died at the death of 1,000 cuts, and they are all very well intentioned. So,
thank you. So I want to point out that this committee will be looking over the interim at public records exemptions and see if we can make some dent in that, in those cuts. So we will be looking at that. Further questions? So I'm going to support this simply because you have a great beard, and we'll move on. Thank you very much. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rebecca Gladstone.
Thank you. For the record, Rebecca Gladstone, League of Women Voters of Oregon. Thank you, Chair Riley, members of the committee, for hearing our testimony. And forgive me for reading it. The League of Women Voters of Oregon supports transparency and efficiency in government processes. We've submitted supportive testimony this session for public records bills for policy. That was Senate Bill 481, formation of an advocate ombudsman and counsel. And that was Senate Bill 106, and public records request disclosure exemption management, House Bill 2101, before it was amended. This bill addresses a category of exemption from mandatory public records disclosure and I was impressed that it was Section 1, Subsection 40, addresses privacy of email addresses for those receiving newsletters from legislators. It's assumed that those corresponding with legislators would be subscribed to incumbent newsletters and their emails would then be available. I found the bill confusing, and so I included the subsection. This subsection and ORS 244.1040 do not prohibit, et cetera. And this, the intention would be that the email list could then be used from the legislative side to the campaign side for the incumbent and also for the competitors by request. There's growing societal concern with both online privacy and the increasing lack of transparency for commercial data as the management systems evolve. The concept of if you're not the consumer of electronic communications, social media, and so forth, you're the product, has been argued as not binary, that if you're paying, you may not get better service and your privacy may not be assured. It highlights an understanding that there is a commercial value to electronic data, especially contact information. We feel that the common expectation for those emailing their legislators would be for a right to privacy, that their addresses would not be sold, not be publicly available, that their contact information would not be used as products. It may be that this will ultimately become a transparency expectation. We supported 3274A to clarify the ORS coverage that was found to be ambiguous, the one that Senator Haas just referred to. And they put a disclaimer on all of their client emails that I included in my testimony. This email communication is subject to ORS 56.203, Section 4, regarding confidentiality. If email addresses are publicly available, perhaps a similar confidentiality disclaimer should be added to legislative emails. We urge support of this bill, and I would like to add, speaking as a private citizen, that the feedback I've gotten on this is all over the map, from if you give my email address to my incumbent's competitor, then they would use it for their campaigns, but there's no guidance for them not to use it for their PACs or their party lists at various local or state or national levels. And also, this is not a problem. Don't look for it, and we can deal with it if we need to. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Brzezinski.
I just want to get back to that section. So, Becky, what I think I'm hearing you say is potentially we should have some type of prohibition that if you make it available to the current office holder or the current candidate who's filed to run for that elective seat, that they cannot take those addresses and do something else with them besides using them for those purposes?
It's a concern. And if you're meeting, thank you, Chair Riley and Senator Brzezinski for the question. It is a concern, and it may evolve into a problem. If you're meeting in the interim, I would absolutely be interested in hearing the proceedings, even participating. We do care about this.
Well, I think we're, based on what's before us, it sounds like we're probably going to end up moving this today or next week. Mm-hmm. So it seems like we, you know, it sounds to me, with Representative Barnhart here, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, maybe we should ask him to come back up and just talk about that, because I can see some validity. We are doing this, we did this with on the recreational sales of marijuana products, where we're saying that an individual retail outlet can, in fact, ask their customers if they want to be put on a list to be contacted regarding notification of sales or whatever it is. But we've specifically said that they cannot take that information and then pass it on to a third party where you could actually potentially start selling lists. And I think that gets into the privacy stuff. So Representative Barnhart, you probably heard the question I put out there. Could you give us your response?
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a potential weakness with the bill as drafted, exactly the point that the League is raising. I would certainly not object to an amendment that along the lines of of your suggestion that email addresses released in this way or for this purpose would have to come with an agreement from the campaign not to utilize them for any purpose other than the campaign and not to release them to third parties. That would obviate the release to a political party or for the sale of a product or something of that sort, but would be usable only during the campaign process. I can tell you that I had already concluded for myself that if an opponent of mine in an election asked for the email addresses, I would attempt to extract an agreement of exactly that sort before delivering the email addresses.
Sure.
Yes.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess I don't know if you'd actually be in a position of bargaining for that because you're not going to be the one that would be releasing, because I would assume this is going to be a public records request coming to your office, and then legislative council would be representing us, I guess is what I'm going to say, mm-hmm. as to what we have to do or not do. So it seems to me that if we're going to address this issue, it needs to be in statute. So legislative council, if they agree that these, through the public records request, is to be given to this candidate mm-hmm. or to the incumbent, that there would be some type of language that would be required to be disseminated with it so everyone's on notice. And then the reality is, if we do that, do we need to have something in the way of some type of potential civil penalty if they, in fact, breach that? Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So, yes, Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do I understand, you know, in the fine print here that an opposing candidate from a different party could request your email address?
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to block that in this totally. I mean, that just doesn't seem right. I mean, somebody's got a political bent and they're working on behalf of a candidate to have the other side start bombarding them. Emails should be protected, in my opinion.
Either of you have a...
I absolutely have a statement to that. Thank you, Chair Riley, Senator DeBoer. That was something that, personally speaking, as a campaigner in the past, came to mind immediately. Somehow we have to balance that with the need for transparency. And given that our time frame within this session is pushing, I would advocate that this bill as it stands is an improvement over the current circumstances. I personally would like to see it altered, and if doing so would hobble it to the degree where it wouldn't pass, that would be unfortunate. I would like to see it changed. My personal opinion is more towards the privacy that at least one of my people spoke to. I want my email address to be private. People don't understand when they become bombarded that they may not have intended to be a supporter not only for their candidate, but for their candidate's local county or state or national party or the separate arms of the national party and the various PACs that may get the email. And I would personally add, they certainly wouldn't understand why they're getting emails from opponents. On the other hand, transparency is an issue. And this is an evolving field, quickly evolving. So if we can be nimble, which I don't think is an attribute of statute, I apologize. It's something we need to be aware of and work on.
Representative?
Thank you. I'm smiling because, of course, I completely agree. The legislature is not nimble, and writing statutes is difficult. I would share within the idea in the suggestion that it's better to pass this bill with all of its warts than to try to fix it and not get it passed. Because the current rule is wide open. Anybody can request and get this information and use it for any purpose whatsoever if they make the request at the right time and in the right way. This bill would add significant restrictions that that the current law doesn't allow. I think the concerns raised by Senator Pozanski, Mr. Chair, are valid concerns, and I think it's a value judgment for the committee to decide whether it makes sense to simply say we're not going to have a distribution to a candidate in another party or another candidate for the office. I can see that as being not an unreasonable position. I think as a matter of, well, I put it in the bill originally the way it is because of my sense that those interested in the public policy issues are not necessarily my supporters, might very well be interested in hearing from a candidate who was opposed to my candidacy, who took a different position. In my district, there are a number of people who regularly attend my town hall meetings, who regularly contact me, who would never vote for me and do not support my views, along with those of exactly the opposite persuasion. Mm-hmm. So I think the question we're discussing is clearly a significant policy question, but I would join in the opinion it's better to pass this bill as is than not pass a bill.
Yeah, so I guess where I'm at, we got a week. We can actually come up with something. If we can come up with something that seems to tighten us down, so be it. If not, we've already got this. I assume the paperwork's ready now. So we have the fallback. We can always pass this as is in a week. What I'm going to suggest is that we look at putting some type of limitations on this. And Senator DeBoer, you know, as much as I agree with that perspective, the reality, I mean, I can see the media play, oh, these insiders have basically kept this information away from other people. So it's like we're setting ourselves up for criticism. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, I think that it's only if we as individual legislators are going to make this request, public records request, to get the information from our state servers, you have to have it open to any other candidate that's running for that side, or I see that as it's going to have political ramifications. It's going to go way beyond, and I think Representative Barnhart pretty well hit it on the head. There's a lot of people who are on our list who more than likely wouldn't be voting for us in a candidacy basis, but they appreciate having the opportunity to have dialogue with us. And, you know, and the reality is, there's, if they find another person that contacts them through this process that's a candidate of their choice, so be it.
One thought I had is that people who want to hear from the opponent of an incumbent will certainly do so without our help.
Well, that's true too.
So I'm not all that concerned about that, because I know that any candidate is going to be happy to give out their email to anyone who wants to contact them and see them, and we don't have to do that. They will do it. So anyway, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to carry this over to next Wednesday, and I'm going to close this public hearing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we have one thing left on our agenda, and that's House Bill 2190, and I'm also carrying that over to next Wednesday. So that does it, I think.
Wait, make sure you got everything carried over that you got.
I think I'm good.
That's good.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm good.
Grab the gavel with you.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to close this committee, and we are adjourned.
We have a lot fewer.
Committee, and we are adjourned.